Starting a series today called These Are My People, because we all have people. We all identify with someone, and I want to take a couple minutes and let us self-identify the groups of people that are your people. So some people are camping people. You like to camp. So if you're a camping person, those are your people. Raise your hand for me. I want to see how many campers we got. Raise them high. Cool. Okay. Some people don't know what to put their hand up or not. Here's my deal with camping people. I'll say most, I think all of the camping people that I know have a house. They have a house. And they say they like to camp, and most of the camping people I know complain about it raining. So they're like, you have a good camping trip? Well, it rained and stuff like that. And so this is what you do. You leave a good house that has a roof that's going to keep you dry, and you go into the mountains or to the woods where it's outdoors, and in the outdoors it rains. So I don't get that about camping people, but camping people, they stick together. Another group of people, golfers. We got some golfing people. Who in here is golfing people? Okay, so do that again, because y'all are really in the minority golfers, people. 3, 5, 7, 8, 9. Okay, golfing people. Here's my deal with the sport of golf. It's the only sport that I know, and this is why I think you're soft. I think golfing people are soft, and this is why. Now, I could be wrong, but this is why. This is my take on golfing people. It's the only sport that I know that when someone gets ready to do something, they have professional people tell everybody to shut up. So you got the golf clap. Now, when a basketball player is shooting a free throw and there's 1 second left in the game, has anybody ever seen the referee come up here and say, hey, y'all, shut up. He's shooting a free throw. Be quiet so it doesn't interrupt them. Or, 2 seconds left in a football game and, hey, everybody be quiet. That's why I think. But golfing people are cool. I just think you're a little soft. Gamers. Some people like games and they're called gamers and electronics and stuff. And sometimes they're a little more hesitant to raise their hand. But if your people are gamers. Okay. I can't believe you raised your hand. In the last 2 weeks, behind on the walls in this auditorium, there's sound panels, and the sound panels help with the acoustics. In the last 2 weeks, a BCCer, I went to a BCCer's house, and I went down into a room that was set up for gaming, and there was sound panels in the room. So I was like, dude, what's the sound panels for? And this person has sound panels in their gaming room because they crank up the surround sound so much that they needed acoustic sound panels to make it better. And I made a bet. And if the person is in the room right now, don't raise your hand because that you're really going to embarrass yourself if you do. But I have never been into a house, and I bet the hundreds of you all are here, never been into a house that has sound panels in it. Am I wrong? Has anybody been into a house? See, gamers are weird. And here's the deal. With the gamers, this is how you get good at gaming. This is, for you to be a good gamer, you don't have a life. Because all you do is spend time playing on a computer. You don't work, you stay up all night long and stuff like that. But gamers got gamer people. And my favorite people, you knew I was going to mention NASCAR people. NASCAR people, raise your hand, you're proud. Man, I know. Oh, some of them are embarrassed right now. I had a picture, but somebody I love wouldn't let me show it. And it was a picture of your NASCAR people. And I shouldn't do this, but all you gotta do is Google NASCAR people and you'll see your people. I went to one NASCAR event, and in that many hour event, I've seen more intoxicated people and alcohol than I had the last 10 years of my life. And if you can imagine, if there's nothing up on the screen, but the picture that I wanted to show was a large lady's back. She had a halter tank top on, and so there was a lot of skin on her back, and it was a lot because she was large, enough for the whole name of a race car driver that was dead and his car. Next, she has tattooed her entire back. Those are your people, NASCAR people. And the people that were sitting next to her didn't get any better. They're a unique group of folks. And yes, your drivers are athletes. I believe that. We got music people. There's the band was up here. Music people are creative and artsy people. Who's creative, artsy, and music people? Okay, those are your people. I can't relate to music people. I love them because, like, today I worship God because creative music people and artsy people. I laughed. Some artsy people took some pictures of me and Kenny and Matt doing some yoga. So creative and artsy people, I just don't resonate with them. And I learned that in high school. So I was in an art class, and this was our first assignment. People were getting back, I think it was a drawing or something like that. People were getting A's and B's and all that stuff, and we were passing the papers out. Someone passes, and I looked for the grade on mine, and on the top of mine, it just said wrong. I didn't even get a grade. I just wrong. And so I don't. Shopping people. that was a kind of a moan. Who's my people are shopping people? Okay, be proud. Cool. I'm not a big shopper, but I think I would be a shopping person. I'm afraid. I told you before that I had to get rid of all my catalogs because this is my problem with shopping people. I end up, when I see something, thinking I need it when I don't. So I can see a picture or something and get something on sale, and I'm like, man, I know I don't need that thing, but it's 50% off. But my computer figured me out. Okay, so I don't get catalogs. I canceled Cabela's. I canceled Bass Pro and stuff that makes me think because I want to be, these are my people, shopping people, but I can't handle that. But my computer figured me out because when I turn the thing on and I open stuff up now, it'd be like, Jeff, boots are 50% off. I need another pair of boots like I do a hole in the head, but if I see 50% off boots, I've got boots that have tags on them and stuff. So y'all have to be careful. Maybe you don't. I would be a shopping person, but I can't control myself in that. Here's two more areas. How many here, these are your people, moms with crazy kids people? Yeah, that's the biggest category. Okay. And this is, the last one's a little more serious. No sounds, just this. How many people here, your people, are Fire Butch Jones people? No sounds? Okay. They were proud. That was the proudest group. And how many of these are my people? No, we're going to hang on to this winner. Okay, not as many, but they're out there. We all have our people, and it goes further than that. We all want to be known for something. We want to be identified with a group. And one of the questions that I want you to think of this morning, this may be the most important question of the morning. What do you want to be known for? Because when usually it doesn't happen. I mean, we think about it after we die, or sometimes it's when somebody moves. But what do you want? That might be the most important question, because at the end of your life, or at the end of your time, or at the end of your employment, at the end of something, you will be known for something. And it's an important question because, man, we have the privilege of kind of molding that. What do you want to be known for? Who are your people that you love enough? What's identity? What is so common? One of the things that all of us have in common here, every one of us have in common, is we all have scars. So let me ask this question. I don't want nobody show them, but who has a physical scar in here somewhere on their body? Okay. Most everybody, which I would expect, and probably I would say at the end of life, virtually everyone has a physical scar. So we all have physical scars. There's two kinds of scars. In your notes, this isn't that important, so you don't have to write it down. There's one thing that's important that I'll encourage you to write down if you're taking notes, and then I think there's one place for filling the blanks. This ain't that important. You already know this. There's two kinds of scars. One is the kind of scars we give ourselves. We've done something. Oftentimes, this is the result of stupidity. Half the scars on my body are the result of me making dumb decisions, doing things that is kind of like, hey, watch this kind of thing, and it didn't turn out good. I've got scars all up and down my knees when I was a little kid because for some reason I thought that you could slide on concrete. And every pair of my jeans had patches on them, and my knees are, I'm like, Mom, what kind of mom are you? You let me slide on concrete, and my knees are all jacked up now. But I have scars that I gave them to myself. And the second kind of physical scars are the scars we receive from others. So I've got some scars. My tooth is chipped from my brother hitting me. That was a scar that I remember our little scrimmage a long time ago. When I was in high school playing baseball, when it would rain outside, we would have to go inside for practice, and they had a course in the hallways of Maryville High School, and so we would run, and there's doors that would close, and like bright teenagers do, we figured out a way to play this game, and when we would run, when we would get to the doors, we would close it on the people behind us, so when they turned the corner, there would be these big old huge metal doors closed. And we were running one day, and there was two of us out in front, and I was one of them people out in front running with a whole baseball team. I was out in front, and there was a guy behind me. His name was Tater. And we were coming around this thing, and I was trying to beat him. We turned this corner, and the doors were open. And so I closed it behind me, and then in about 2 seconds, I just heard this bam. And that kind of made me laugh. And then I got around and went back and took me, and then I went over there, and I seen blood all over the floor. I was like, oh, my goodness. He had ran into the door and had stopped practice and took him to the hospital and got stitches. Dumb, I know. You're like, man, you're dumb. Yeah, I was dumb. And but it was now Tater has a scar on his arm from me. So sometimes you get a scar from something that somebody else has done to you. So that's physical scars. There's another kind of scar, and they're emotional and spiritual, sometimes psychological, similar, but they go deeper. They're not physical scars, and they're the same kind. There's two kinds of spiritual, emotional scars, the kind we give ourselves. So we have emotional, spiritual, psychological scars because we made bad decisions. We did something. We went somewhere. We talked to somebody. We took that. We made a decision, and it hurt us spiritually, and it hurt us emotionally or psychologically, and we have a scar. And we know it was our own decision. It was just a stupid thing that we done, and we'll carry that scar for the rest of our lives, just like a physical scar. And then there's the emotional, spiritual scars that we receive from other people. Somebody else wounded us, and it hurt, and it's going to go with us just like the physical scars on our bodies. Somebody did something to us, and we're going to carry that with us for the rest of our lives. So this is the important part that if you want to take notes, this is an important part, when it comes to scars, it doesn't matter what kind of scars. When it comes to scars, we have two choices, and this is important because this is up to you. So with the scars that we all have, that you know that you have, and I know that you have, and you know that I have, all of us have scars. We have two choices when it comes to scars. And number one, our scars tell our story. And that's not a blank, but our scars tell our story. In other words, our scars identify us. So I see this often in people's lives when I talk to them, and it particularly when we're in private conversations, and they're like, hey, my name is this, and I want you to know this. And oftentimes, one of the first things that they want me to know is a scar. I've done this. I've done this. I'm in this position. This is my status. And their scar identifies who they are. And the second choice that we have is, instead of our scar telling our story, our healing tells our story. So something's happened, and bad things happen to all of us, and we get scarred emotionally or spiritually or psychologically, and then we go through life. And I've seen some people where that scar derails the rest of their lives. And then I've seen people who go through very, very, very similar things. And this is tough, but let's talk about it for a second, because the most difficult thing that we will go through in life has to do usually with the tragic death of someone else. The second thing that's super common, that's super painful, is divorce and breakup of homes. So in those two situations, looking at the most extreme scars that can happen in life, I have seen, and you have probably seen, people whose scars identified them to the point where they were derailed for the rest of their lives. And their scar, that circumstance, what they brought into, identified them for the rest of their lives. And then I've seen people with the same kind of tragic event, and rather than letting that scar identify who they are and derail their life, somehow they were able to let a story of healing define who they were instead of that event. And it's sad for a pastor, because you know that it is possible for people to heal, even in the toughest circumstances and tragedies in life, because we've seen God do it in other people. So I'm thinking about these two ways people respond to scars, and I ask the question, how do we heal? Man, and that's a huge question. I think it's an important question, but how do we heal? How can one person heal in another person? How does healing take place? And I want us to look at a story, because within this story, I think, is not all the answers, but the most fundamental, critical answers. Especially in my experience, when I've seen people who have scars be able to get true healing and move on in life. And it's actually, don't tell anybody, but this is a church history lesson, but it's not going to seem like a church history lesson. We're just going to look back at the church a long time ago and how God used the church and how God didn't use the church, how the church caused scars in other people, and how God used the church to heal the scars in other people. Main character, his name is Barnabas. Barnabas was a young stallion, a young Christian who took his faith seriously, and he's made some decisions, and he's gonna have a huge decision to make. And the decision is gonna revolve around, is he gonna follow those people, the leaders of the church that have been influencing him, or is he going to take a step of faith and do something that's different than what people were doing back then? This is at a time in the church where persecution was taking place. So Jesus was murdered for his faith, and then the Roman government, using Jewish people, persecuted Christians or people who were following Jesus to the point where they were murdering them in terrible, horrible ways, causing all kinds of scars and death, both physically and emotionally and spiritually. So that's kind of the climate that this account happens in Acts chapter 11. Now those who had been scattered, the Christians who had been scattered by the persecution in connection with Stephen. Stephen was a young man who was a good man and had a strong heart and followed the Lord, and he was murdered by being stoned to death. Stephen was murdered for his faith in one of the most horrible ways I could imagine. And this was done in the marketplace out in the community where people could hear and see this terrible act. And not only did it kill a young man, the scars that it created emotionally and spiritually in the people that are around, I can't imagine when you see something tragic like that. So Stephen was martyred for his faith, and the Romans and Jews were persecuting the Jesus followers so much that they had to leave. They didn't want to. This was Jerusalem was their home. And so they took off because they knew that if they weren't martyred for their faith, they would be tortured and condemned. Those who had been scattered by the persecution in connection with Stephen, who was just stoned, traveled as far as Phoenicia, Cyprus, and Antioch, telling the message only to Jews. So this group of Christians that was persecuted left because people were getting killed. They went to different cities. And this group of Christians that was being persecuted, this blows my mind, they wouldn't share the message of God's grace to anybody other than the religious people. They shared the gospel, the news that Jesus provided a way, forgave sin, has grace. So people with scars who were being persecuted, the church left and went to other areas, and they created their own scars. How did they create their own scars? Have you ever been intentionally left out? Have you ever felt like you are not welcome and everybody else is welcome? Have you ever been the last one on the line hoping that somebody would pick you and nobody did? Have you had someone tell you, you're not my people? You're not my kind. You're not welcome here. That's what the church was doing. If you're religious, if you're a Jew, then you can hear the message. If you're not, if you're an unchurched person, if you're a Gentile, if you're a Greek, then this message of healing isn't for you. Telling the message only to the Jews. Some of them, some of the church, a small fraction, a group, men from Cyprus and Cyrene went to Antioch. Antioch was a city on the Mediterranean Sea, a big city. It was the third largest city in the Roman Empire at that time. So men went to Antioch and began to speak to the Greeks, began to speak to the sinners, began to speak to the worldly, began to speak to the unchurched. They took a step of faith. They began to speak to the Greeks also, telling them the good news about the Lord Jesus Christ. Sometimes God raises people in generations to buck tradition and take faith steps and do something different for his purposes. Happened very beginning in the early church. In every century, you see it in church history. A group. And the Lord's hand was with them. God doesn't, some people buck the system and they're way off base. It's not always the case. In this case, the Lord's hand was with them. And a great number of people believed and turned to the Lord. So these men say, no, this message of healing is for everyone. We're going to tell it to everyone. And they go to a city called Antioch and share the good news. And God starts blessing. News of this reached the ears of the church at Jerusalem. The church. God's doing some work up in Antioch. And the unchurched people, Greeks, are getting saved. And the guys who are up there telling them about the good news, they're even telling them that they don't have to follow the Jewish laws. Now the church heard. It is crazy to me how the church will attack its own. Matt mentioned that he's going to be teaching next week, and he's going to be teaching on unity. Because unity is such a huge characteristic of the church. The church at Jerusalem heard that good things were happening and people were getting healed. And if you know the rest of the story, you know what happens. If you've been a Christian for 20 years, a Christ follower, you ought to know the rest of the story. But if you don't know the rest of the story, man, it's like, what are they going to do? What's the big church going to do? Now that good things are happening, news of this, news of the good things happening in Antioch, news of people coming to Jesus, news of people being healing, reached the ears of the church at Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas to Antioch. So for some reason, they pick a guy named Barnabas. Hey, Barnabas, go up there and check out and see what's going on. And when I didn't know what happened, I was like, what's Barnabas going to do? Is Barnabas going to be like those church people, or is Barnabas going to be like those church people? If you're here last Sunday, one of the most profound things, the only profound thing that I said last Sunday was this. God orchestrates the collision or the intersection of people who need God with people who know God. This past week, if you know God, God would have tried to intersect your life with somebody, if you know God, with somebody who needs God. He does it all the time. He does it when you go to work and when you go to school and when you're practicing. God, I learned this because I thought on vacation I could take a vacation from some of my faith issues. And even on vacation, God orchestrates the collision of people who need God with people who know God. And here we see God orchestrating the intersection of people who need God with Barnabas, who knows God. When he, Barnabas, arrived and saw the evidence of the grace of God. Now, I hate to skim over that so quickly because the evidence of the grace of God was the people who were healed and the marriages that were restored and the addicts whose sin chain was broken and people who were in bondage were freed. Those who experienced the grace of God experienced healing. The evidence of the grace of God, he was glad. He saw this and he was glad. And encouraged them all to remain true to the Lord. Because that's where the healing was coming from. With all their hearts. He, Barnabas, was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and faith. And a great number of people were brought to the Lord. So So how does healing take place? Healing for people who've been wounded and have scars. Some because of religion, some because of marriage, some because of addiction, because of all the messes that we get into. How does healing take place? What do we just see? That the Lord uses his people. If you're filling in blanks, healing is possible with the Lord using his people. Now, I don't know why God does this, why God chose to use you and God chose to use me to help in healing with someone else. But I do know this, that my path is going to intersect with someone that needs to know God. And when I'm done with that encounter, that person will be more encouraged or less encouraged by our interactions, maybe by my reputation. And God will use this church to interact with someone who needs to know God. And this morning when you're here, or when they come to our next event, or if they come next Sunday, they intersect with you and me in our church, there'll be the great opportunity for healing to begin, to take place. And the story ends like this. Then Barnabas went to Tarsus, it's a little city a little bit further north, to look for Saul. He was going to get somebody else. And when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So Barnabas goes and sees this great things happening and sees the church reaching out to people who need healing. And they're not saying, oh man, you're a white person, I'm not talking to you. You're a black person, I'm not talking to you. Oh, you used to be a Mormon, I'm not talking to you. Oh, you're a Muslim, I'm not, no, this ain't for you. None of that. Everybody's welcome. We want everyone to know about Jesus and what he did because he loves you. He brought Saul back to Antioch. And so for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church. The great things that were happening in Antioch were so important to Barnabas that he didn't want religious people and he didn't want pagan sabotaging or derailing the great things that were happening in that community. So he went and got his buddy Paul, Saul, who became Paul, and they lived there for a year to invest in that church, to fan the flame of their grace. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. And this next sentence is the reason why I chose this scripture for this morning. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. The first time that this word was used. In other words, these are my people, these people who are acting like Jesus. There wasn't a word for Christian, and then these people in Antioch who are extending grace, who are being used by God to heal other people, had a reputation in the community, and others were outside looking, and they're like, man, they're little Christians. They're acting Jesus Christ-like. They never had been called Christians before. They had been known as the Way and different things. But for the first time, there was a group that could say, these are my people. And it's centered around this God-man named Jesus. These are my people. The people that are willing to take faith risks and buck tradition. These are my people who are willing to sacrifice. and to give and to forgive. These are my people, the ones who God can use when we intersect with someone who needs to know God. And after that interaction, they're closer to God or more encouraged to pursue God. These are my people. So for the last couple weeks, I've been thinking about this deal. What do I want to be known for? And I thought about a lot of stuff. It's worth your intellectual energy and time this week to get by yourself in prayer and to think on that question, because you won't have enough time to do it this morning. See, now I've concluded, as much as I want to, you know, when we talked about our people, these are my people. Man, my people are outdoors people. I can identify. Man, I want to catch a big fish and I want to shoot a big deer, but that's not it. Now, I could catch the biggest fish in the world and 5 minutes later, I need another one. That's not what I want to be known for. I'm cool with them people. I like them people. Like outdoorsmen and like campers. That's not what I want to be known for. I used to be a decent counselor when I worked in mental health. And probably, I maybe could have been known as a good counselor or something like that. And I left mental health because that's not what I wanted to be known for. It wasn't that. Some of you are business people. Man, you like to deal. And you know that's not what you want to be known for. You're a professional. I'm a professional this, or I'm a professional that, or I'm a vocational this. Man, I got friends. I'm like, man, he is a great electrician. I'm like, dude, you're great. I don't want to be known as an electrician. That's not what, I'm cool with it, it's great, I love this part of it, but man, I'm a businessman and this is what I do and I enjoy it and God used me. That's not what I want to be known for. Most people don't want to be known for their career only. Something bigger than that. I even concluded that what part of what I want to be known for, I want to be known as a good husband and a good father. But that's not it. If that was it, that's part of it, but that's, in kind of along the same line, I want to be known as someone that has integrity and not a liar, except when it comes to hunting and fishing. Hunting and fishing, you can bend the truth, but in other areas, I don't want to be known as a liar. But if when I'm dead or I leave, because that's when people will talk about you. That's when you're going to be known for something, right? You leave high schoolers, you're going to be known for something. When something ends, and most of the time we think about our life ending, you're going to be known for something. People will talk about you. Some people will talk about you, and you will be known for something. And I didn't even want to just, you know, one of the things that I want to do is do a good job of teaching the Bible. But that's, man, if I died and they're like, man, he taught the Bible, it was even more than that. I mean, that's a good thing, and I want that, but that's not what I want to be known for. And it took me a while to figure it out. I'm not going to tell you. Because I don't want to influence what you want to be known for. But I do want my people to be like the people we just read about. Not the religious ones that push people away. I do want more than any of my people. When we watched that video before I got up to share, and there was a bunch of pictures of things, those are my people. Man, I would much rather share that video than all the hunting pictures that I have any day. Those are my people. The people that I get to partner with and sacrifice, because if you do anything good and big, it takes sacrifice. If you want this place to be your people and you're a Christ follower, be ready to sacrifice. Because if you don't sacrifice, then this isn't going to be your people, because we sacrifice. This is my people. And I wonder how God would continue to use this church if, like the church that went to Antioch, we realized that God was going to use us to intersect as people who know God with people who need to know God. And then healing and God's grace started happening in people's lives. And like the church back then had this reputation for good things, people started saying, man, Blount Community Church, them are some crazy people. They love other people till it hurts. They won't push anybody away. Ain't nobody's too dirty for that place. They'll welcome anyone. And then the church people start talking bad about us because that's what they've always done. But the church people out there are not my people. These are my people. And I think God is going to do some great things as he continues to bless. So this week, I challenge you to go back and read that story. And don't lose the thought, what do I want to be known for? Would you bow your heads with me, please? God, I thank you that you've given us a wonderful opportunity to be a group of people whose identity, whose people can be known for sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. God, I thank you that I get to be a part of my friends that are here that also want to be known for doing great things in your name. And God, I pray that you would continue to guide our church in such a way that the path of our church will intersect with people who need to know you. And God, as we go our separate ways, those of us who know you would leverage the opportunities that we have at work, in school, in home, and fields to love other people so that healing could take place. God, there's some people that are here this morning that need healing. And we know that healing is possible with you. And God, we know that you use your people. So I pray for those that need healing this morning. And God, there's some of us here you want to use to help in the healing of someone else. God, may we take serious that the church is our people and use us to do great things for your honor and for your glory. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for coming. God bless you. Have a great rest of the day.